Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent, bringing you everything from the boats to the boardrooms, breaking down the news, spilling a little industry fish oil, and sharing the sharp market insights you need to know. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione.
It's happening, Lauren. Seafood Expo North America is finally here.
And I've got my best walking shoes already packed.
That's
just
what I
kidding.
Want.
You know, I have nothing prepared just yet.
I was gonna say that's what I wanted to hear. I was gonna say I'm really impressed, but no, I should know better. Well, CENA, also known as the Boston Seafood Show, officially kicks off on Sunday, March 15th, and runs for 3 days, ending on Tuesday, March 17th.
Another St. Patrick's Day Expo this year, so make sure you've got something green to wear. This year marks the 44th edition of the event, and of course, the Undercurrent team will be on the floor rolling deep to report on all the news. How many people are we bringing along this year?
There's 18 of us.
18?
I know. This is so exciting. We have people coming in from across the pond. So, of course, we have Tom Seaman, the editor and chief and founder of Undercurrent. And then we have a ton of our sales teams members from within the U.S. and outside the U.S. So, and we also have Dan Gibson from the reporting side too. So we are so excited to cover everything from new product launches to interviews with executives. If it's happening at CENA, you'll be able to read about it on Undercurrent. And speaking of new products, I gotta say that besides the giant reunion and getting to see friends and contacts, my favorite thing about Boston Seafood Show is checking out the new products. I love getting to try something and learn about it right on the spot, ask all the questions, get it out of the way right then and there. And then the added bonus of being able to go home and brag to your friends about how you got to try the most delicious new seafood item that's going to be hitting the stores. I think that's really fun. At last year's show, we had the opportunity to interview Jade and Gant Taylor, the husband and wife team behind Angel Oak Smokehouse. Lauren, you and I had met Jade a couple months prior at the National Fisheries Institute's Global Seafood Market Conference, where we got to hear her amazing story of going from an engineer for Boeing to launching her own smoked salmon company.
What can't she do?
She's amazing. So we wanted to check out Angel Oak in Boston last year. It was the company's first time exhibiting at the event. And I think it took us until the last day to finally get time to chat with her because the booth was so busy every time we stopped by.
And for good reason. Not only was the booth's design stunning, but the samples they had were being talked about across the show.
The salmon raviolis.
I still think about them.
Oh my gosh. Well, I have great news then. I don't want to talk too much about the raviolis because we're going to have Jade and Gant on the podcast again this year at the show. And I want them to tell the story. But the great news is that this year, Angel Oak is showcasing the hot smoked salmon ravioli retail product. And it's a Seafood Excellence Award finalist in the retail category.
Of course it is. But that is great news. You know, there was another smoked salmon product named as a finalist that also caught my eye. St. James Smokehouse has come out with a Fruitwood Limoncello smoked salmon.
Ooh, that screams summer breakfast to me. I think I'll take two.
Yeah. I was thinking on top of a salad. Either way, something unique and of course convenient as a ready-to-eat protein.
St. James Smokehouse, also adding that to my CENA bucket list. And if we're talking smoked salmon, we can't leave out Echo Falls, which was also named as a finalist in the Seafood Excellence retail category. The company has introduced smoked Norwegian Atlantic salmon party slices. So you can get 3 flavors, pepper, traditional, and dill in 1 sampler platter.
Super convenient, which does seem to be the trend with some of the other retail products that were named finalists. For example, did you see Thunder's Catch is back up there?
Yes, former Seafood Excellence winners. And I think also another husband and wife dynamic duo team.
Yes, yes. They are back with another shelf-stable seafood item. This time, Alaska Fisherman's Chipino.
I'm definitely interested in that because there's no way I'm making that dish at home. That's a lot of work. And also, I feel like that's hard to find at restaurants near us. I think it's more of like a West Coast dish.
Well, keep your eyes peeled because this one is made with sockeye salmon from Bissell Bay, plus shrimp and clams sourced from the Pacific. And then the other retail finalist that caught my eye was Cox's Kickin' Tikka Masala Wild-Caught American Shrimp. It's a new, raw, ready-to-cook seafood that they say is ready in 5 minutes. So it's not only got the quick and convenient meal thing going for it, but it hits the bold flavor profile that we heard about back at GSMC. And of course, since it's Cox's, it's 100% American wild-caught shrimp.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because packaging is another thing that I really look at when I'm at the show. And I'm not talking about the eye-catching designs, which I also look for. I'm talking about like what these packages actually say. Like, it used to be sustainably sourced on everything, which it still is. But last year, the one that caught my eye was for GLP-1 support. And that was before it really took off this year. It was Smash It, the salmon superfood balls from the Plant-Based Food Company. I'm curious to see if we'll see more direct GLP-1 targeting like that. I know they were the only booth last year that I also saw with the phrasing MAHA friendly. So especially with the guideline shift and with more push towards more protein, eating more seafood, I'm curious if more packaging will say that this year.
Yeah, I definitely think we're going to see a bigger focus on the amount of protein in a product. That number has always been there, but I think it's just going to be bigger, more pronounced.
Yes, like 23 grams, it does seem like the font's getting a little bit bigger
Yes.
when it comes to how many grams of protein on it. They're definitely testing the font size there, putting little stars underneath it, something
Right.
to catch
I
the
don't need to
eye.
know the amount of protein in my Starbucks, but I'm all for it on my seafood
I
products.
am all for it on my seafood products, yes. Which is also funny because I remember that we were also talking to Anne Marie Roerink about that at GSMC, and she was telling us about how she found the it was Pop-Tarts that were like the protein Pop-Tarts. And ever since she said that, I've been seeing more and more, and it's like the silliest things that I'm seeing it on that I'm like, why do I need why am I buying this for more protein? But moving along, moving along. Moving on to the Seafood Excellence food service finalists, two out of three are Alaska Pollock products, and they both sound amazing. First up, King and Prince Seafood's Mrs. Friday's line has introduced honey butter biscuit wild Alaska Pollock. I love honey. I love butter. I love biscuits. I love wild Alaska Pollock. This sounds like a home run to me. And then Trident Seafoods has come out with a crispy battered sauceable nuggets, also made with Alaska Pollock, of course. The bite-sized pieces are battered in a neutral coating to make them adaptable across cuisines and formats.
The last food service finalist couldn't be more different. It's Azuma Foods Taco Wasabi, a staple Japanese dish made with raw marinated octopus. Winners from both the retail and food service categories will be announced on Sunday, March 15th at 3:30 p.m. in the Wavemaker Zone. So be sure to check it out.
All right, we've got plenty of Boston coverage coming your way. So for now, let's turn to some of the big headlines this week. And this one made national headlines. The US Department of Defense spent $6.9 million on lobster tail, $2 million on Alaskan king crab, and $1 million on salmon in September 2025 alone. That's the last month of the previous fiscal year. This was all reported on by Open the Books. So it was part of a record $93.4 billion spent by the department. And according to the Independent Taxpayer Watchdog Group, that's more than any federal agency has spent on grants and contracts in a single month since at least 2008.
So this story is wild because I've been reading some local headlines about school superintendents misusing funds for lobster dinners, but this is a whole new level. Now, as Undercurrents' Jason Huffman reported, it's not unusual for US federal agencies to make big expenditures at the end of a fiscal year because budgeted money not used is forfeited and can result in a reduction of future funding. But with that said, Open the Book said that there has never been anything quite like September of 2025.
I cannot wait to see this play out on South Park or something like that. But until then, definitely check out Jason's article. So, link in the show notes.
To carry on with some lobster-related news, Benson Seafood, formerly known as Benson Lobster, a fifth-generation family-owned seafood company from the Canadian province of New Brunswick, is expanding with a $7.4 million build as it rebrands to become a multi-species and value-added producer. CEO Casey Benson told Undercurrent this week that the company is adding a 15,000 square foot processing facility to its operations. The expansion will allow the company to add frozen lobster tails as well as scallops and Jonah crab to its product lineup.
Elsewhere in New Brunswick, private equity-backed US-based shellfish supplier Atlantic Sustainable Catch is looking to cut one of its Canadian lobster plants loose. New Bedford, Massachusetts-based ASC purchased the property in January 2024 from Raymond O'Neill and Son Fisheries. The more than 62,000 square foot factory reportedly has a processing capacity of up to 80,000 pounds of lobster daily. and also a live holding system to accommodate 80,000 pounds. It's listed for $3.7 million.
Moving to lobster on the U.S. side, the Maine Department of Marine Resources released its preliminary lobster landings for 2025 at the Maine Fishermen's Forum last Friday. Maine lobstermen landed 78.8 million pounds of lobster last year, garnering a combined ex-vessel value of $461.4 million, a drop of 10% by volume and 14% by ex-vessel value. UCN's editorial director, Cliff White, was reporting from the event. He said that the Hall of Lobsters, Maine's best-known export and a key piece of the state's identity and culture, has declined every year since 2021, when landings surpassed 110 million pounds. It was the lowest volume total since 2008.
Further, he reported that the department's most recent assessment, approved by the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission in October 2025, found that Maine's lobster population is not depleted, but has fallen below the industry's target. Because the stock remains above biological reference points, the assessment does not automatically trigger management action. However, the commission recommended reviewing the fishery's objectives and the tools available to meet them. The news came as somewhat of a blow to Maine fishermen who have fierce pride in their work and the sustainability of their fishery. Cliff talked to some of the lobstermen at the event. The full story is a must read, so check out the show notes for a link.
He's also got an update on the Maine Lobster Marketing Collaborative, also known as the MLMC, which is facing a fight over its reauthorization. MLMC was created the year after a difficult 2012 season prompted the industry to expand marketing efforts. Its funding was around $2.2 million from 2016 to 2021, but has gradually declined to around $1.7 million in 2025 as license count fell and some revenue was diverted to the Lobster Legal Defense Fund. Cliff reports that critics have expressed frustration with the program and have argued it doesn't boost stock prices for lobstermen. This year, to mollify doubters, it has commissioned a return on investment analysis intended to measure the impact of its work, expected to cost around $30,000. That study, undertaken by an economist, will examine the group's historical marketing spending alongside factors such as landings and competing supply to determine the value MLMC brings to the industry. Again, more details in the show notes.
In other news, the National Fisheries Institute released its annual top 10 list, which reveals a breakdown of U.S. per capita consumption of seafood products. As we reported last month, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Fisheries of the U.S. report was published, revealing that U.S. per capita consumption of seafood products declined by 8.1% from 20.8 pounds in 2022 to 19.1 pounds in 2023. The most frustrating thing about this whole report is how dated it is.
I was wondering if you were going to bring
It's
that
so frustrating. But anyway, this is what we're working with. So NFI uses NOAA's data to compile its annual list of the 10 most consumed seafood species. And according to the Trade Association, seafood's long-running top consumed item, shrimp, took a hit with a 0.4 pound change from 2022 to 5.1 pounds per capita in 2023. Meanwhile, salmon maintained its spot at number two with a 0.29 pound growth up to 3.51 pounds consumed. So, Lauren, I gave you the top two, shrimp and then salmon. Can you guess the rest
Oh
of the
gosh.
top 10?
So, if our efforts haven't helped bump Pollock up the board, I'm going to be a bit upset. Although this is 2023 and that was a long time ago, maybe we'll see our efforts more in 2024. Pollock on the
Pollock is on the list, correct? You have ding ding ding. You have named Pollock on the list. There's not number
Okay,
three,
I'm
but
going to keep going.
I'm not making you go in order. I'm not making you do
Okay,
that.
yes, no, that's too much.
Okay, but you got
All right,
one.
during ShopRite's Cancun sale a few weeks ago, I stocked up on tuna, so I'm going to say that's high up on the list as well.
Yes, number three. That's canned
Oh, number
tuna
three.
with 2 pounds consumed. And just to go back quickly to Alaska Pollock, that was 0.8 pounds consumed, and that was actually up 0.03 pounds.
Okay, all right,
So yay for Pollock.
we're
Canned
part of
tuna,
that.
yeah, canned tuna number three. But it was down surprisingly 0.2.
Maybe the rest of the tinned fish kind of took away from what people normally go after
Okay.
for canned tuna. That's my hypothesis.
But again, was
again,
that what was happening in
2023? Was that? Yes.
It was so long ago, a lifetime
Help
ago.
Us out, Noah.
I have no idea what was happening back then. All right. So we got Cantuna. We got Alaska Pollock. You're on a roll. What else you got?
And then, I mean, I kind of remember from previous years, it was a bunch of whitefish, a big whitefish party. So tilapia, cod, catfish, pangasius.
Ding, 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 ding. Yep, you got them all.
That's what I got.
Tilapia number four, 0.91 pounds consumed. That is a negative 0.1 drop from the previous year. Catfish number six at 0.55 pounds consumed. That's also down 0.25 from the year prior. Pangasius, 0.54. Down 0.21 the year prior.
They're all down.
Cod, number eight at 0.53 pounds consumed. Stayed the same. No change there. So
all right, cods, I guess we'll take that.
Yeah, we'll take it. And then do you want to try to take a stab at the final two?
No, I'm going to quit while I'm ahead.
All right. Well, it's shellfish crab at number nine, 0.45, which is only down 0.02. So not a big change. So we've been seeing in like the retail reports that crabs recently been taking a hit at retail. So I'm curious to see if consumption will be down. We'll let you know in 2030, whenever. Yeah. Stay tuned to catch the current.
Our grandchildren will report on.
All right. The number 10 clams, 0.21, which, clams, you got canned clams, and then by the shore, I mean, that's all I eat on my pasta, so makes sense.
So 2023, was that kind of a normal year post COVID, or was that 2022?
Has anything been a normal year since COVID?
I don't know. I'm just thinking of why consumption has gone down, and was 2023 the time when everybody went back to, you know, eating out?
It could have been more of like a return to work and things like that, where, you know, yeah, you're slowly, yeah,
you're
the pickup from COVID, where
frozen,
yeah,
people seafood in your freezers anymore.
Yeah, you never know. So one thing I want to share is that NFI senior market analyst and director of programs Richard Berry shared there was a win out of all this. Despite the decline, people are eating a wider variety of seafood. The 2023 top 10 list makes up 77% of all seafood consumption, when previous lists made up 79%. So Barry said in the mid-teens, that number was well over 90%. So the data illustrates a continued diversification of America's seafood palate. So
that is a win.
We'll take that one. We'll take it.
Yeah.
Shall we turn to the markets now?
We shall. So today I'm looking at scallops. We had a genuinely surprising week at the New Bedford auction last week in week 10 with a storm-driven surge of large scallops that nobody was expecting this late in the season. But at the same time, the broader wholesale market story hasn't really changed. We're still looking at premium domestic scallops are still tight, buyers are still cautious, and imports aren't filling the gap in any meaningful way. So New Bedford, the country's largest scallop port, posted a surprisingly strong week of landings in week 10. Total volume came in at just over 421,000 pounds. That's more than double the previous week. But what really stood out was the size mix. More than half of those landings were U10 scallops, the largest size category, with all of those large scallops coming out of the Gulf of Maine. So industry sources say that the spike likely came from the recent storms. Heavy seas appear to have uncovered scallops from areas that normally were buried and hard to harvest. So now, normally a big landing like this would ease some pressure in the market, but that's not really what's happening here. The reason is timing. The domestic scallop season is almost over, with the season scheduled to close on March 31st. So even though that big week of landings gave buyers a bit of breathing room, it hasn't fundamentally changed the supply outlook, especially for larger size scallops. And that's why we're seeing an interesting split between dock pricing and the wholesale market. Auction prices in New Bedford fell across most size categories last week because of the sudden increase in supply, but wholesale buyers aren't treating that as a new pricing baseline. Instead, they're looking at it as a temporary replenishment event in a market where freezer inventories of large domestic scallops remain thin. And imports aren't offering much relief either. U.S. scallop imports are trending toward their lowest levels since the pandemic year of 2020, which means overseas supply isn't doing much to offset tight domestic inventories. Now, the new season begins April 1st, Harvests are expected around 17 million pounds. That's down from 21 million pounds anticipated for 2025. But I am hearing some slight optimism from the industry for the first time in a while that things may fare better than anticipated. So stick with Undercurrent for weekly scallop updates, as we don't want to jinx anything there.
Now, before we go, we have some exciting updates. Undercurrent plans to expand its coverage of pin bone out, or PBO, fillet blocks by adding new assessments for Chinese double frozen and Russian single frozen. For Chinese double frozen full fillet PBO blocks using Russian headed and gutted, or H&G raw material, UCN will add three new assessments to its existing free onboard or FOB monthly assessment. In addition to the FOB assessment, where the buyer pays for transport, UCN plans to add costs and freight prices to Germany, as well as duty unpaid and duty paid ex cold store prices. For single frozen Russian PBO fillet blocks, UCN will add a duty paid ex cold store price to its current monthly duty unpaid assessment. The addition of the new price assessments will allow a like-for-like comparison with the duty unpaid ex cold store price for U.S. single frozen PBO pollock fillet blocks to Chinese and Russian products. U.S. products do not incur duty, while the Russian single frozen and Chinese double frozen PBO blocks based on Russia H&G have a 13.7% duty paid by the importer.
Following industry consultation, we plan to launch this price reporting service on March 19th. The new price assessments will be published on the third Thursday of every month, so keep an eye out for that. Meanwhile, we've also launched a new Media Insights tab on the Undercurrent site. This dedicated multimedia terminal is designed to provide subscribers with a more immersive, multidimensional way to consume market data and industry analysis. It currently serves as the exclusive home for our Market Current videos, UCN webinars, UCN Academy, our series of instructional videos designed to help subscribers maximize the value of the platform's data tools, and of course, your favorite seafood industry podcast, Catch the Current. So if you haven't done so already, check out the Media Insights tab on undercurrentnews.com.
I'm glad you brought up the webinars. Undercurrent just hosted one on the global shrimp market last week. We had UCN's very own Gary Morrison and Louis Harkel walking through the turbulent period for the market, covering how shifting US tariff policy has redrawn the competitive landscape between supplying nations, what China's plateauing import growth means for producers, and why Europe is fast emerging as a key growth market. Check out the show notes for a link to watch the full webinar. Now, before we go, you and I were talking about seafood pet treats last week, and then this fell into my lap this week. Finfair Pet Foods, the US seafood-only dog and cat treat company founded by former Acme Smoked Fish executive Gabrielle Viteri, is expanding from direct-to-consumer and specialty shops to major store shelves. The Brooklyn, New York-based company announced this week that its sashimi-grade pet products are now available at Petco stores nationwide. The company, which is backed by Acme, made its official debut at Orlando, Florida's Global Pet Expo last March, introducing a lineup of products including salmon skin strips, salmon nuggets, salmon bites, and salmon crumbles for dogs, as well as salmon skin bites, nuggets, and sprinkles for cats. While Finfair initially launched its products via its own e-commerce platform and Amazon, the company said its strong traction across pet specialty retail has culminated in a nationwide expansion with San Diego, California headquartered Petco, which has more than 1,300 stores in the US.
We'll have to stop by that booth.
They won't be at Seafood Expo North America. I asked. Pet Expo Global is the following week, so I'm afraid we won't see many pet specific companies, but hopefully we'll see products that have spun off from some seafood companies. So, well, we've got to get going if you ever want to make it to Boston, Lauren. But maybe next
I need to
year,
start packing.
yes, maybe next year we'll take a mic on the road and record the whole drive up.
Oh, a little karaoke?
You know it.
Safe travels, everyone. See you on the show floor.